Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So Brahma has asked, who can know where you appear, how you appear, to what extent or in how many forms you appear, and when you appear, indicating, implying, nobody can know all this. Now he continues in his prayers. Tasma tat tat sarvam api tasmin shri krishna rupe antarbhutam ityevam atrapi tatparyam upasamharati. Thus, all the appearances of the Supreme Lord are included within the form of Sri Krishna. This is the purport of these prayers by Brahma also, which Brahma now summarizes. All the forms of the Lord are included in the original form Krishna. And Brahma says, Tasmadidam jagada shesham asat swarupam swapnabhamasta dishanam puru dukkha dukkham twayeva nitya sukabodha tanav anante mayata udyarapi sad yat sad ivavabhati. Okay, now I translated tat tat sarvam as all the appearances of the Supreme Lord. Problem is, the verse that Brahma speaks doesn't talk about the appearances of the Supreme Lord, rather about everything in the material world. So it looks like I translated it wrong. Let me mark this. Okay, thus everything, whatever it is included within the form of Sri Krishna. This is the purport of these prayers by Brahma also, which Brahma now summarizes. So Brahma was making this point throughout his prayers, and now he sums it up. Therefore, this entire universe, which like a dream is by nature unreal, nevertheless appears real, and thus it covers one's consciousness and assails one with repeated miseries. This universe appears real because it is manifested by the potency of illusion emanating from you, whose unlimited transcendental forms are full of eternal happiness and knowledge. Okay, now paraphrasing this. Jiva Goswami reads, Yasmad evam prapancha prapancha vastunam sarvesham api tattva vigraho si. Because in this way you are the factual embodiment, the tattva vigraha, the factual embodiment of all material and non-material things, tasmad eva nitya sukha bodha lakshanaya lakshana yatanus tat surupe nante twayeva shesham idam jagat avabhatiti. The words are moved around here. The words from the verse, but in different order. Anante twayeva shesham idam jagat avabhati. That's the normal order of the words. The verse has them all over the place. It anvayaha. Therefore, because you are the factual embodiment of all material and non-material things, therefore the entire universe manifests within you in this original form. this body, characterized by eternal happiness and awareness. Ityanvayaha, such is the logic of the statement. Okay, sometimes we supply the anvaya by connecting words in one verse with the previous verse. Here, we don't have to do that, but the words are mixed up, so we're putting them into normal grammatical order, verb at the end, subject at the front, just to make it clear. That's the anvaya, just showing the basic syntax of the sentence. Therefore, this entire universe manifests within you, in this original form, this body characterized by eternal happiness and awareness. Actually, I'm sorry, before we started, I considered one question presented by Madan Mohan yesterday. Let me pull it up. Okay, I'll read the question. In 39.5, Jiva Goswami says, "This means that only those forms which appeal to your devotees are desirable, suitable for you, not others." Maybe it's the same as, he's asking, what comes first, chicken or the egg? Kind of question. But is it really possible to draw a causative relationship between the attractiveness of the Lord's forms and their suitability for his devotees? In other words, can a pure devotee really dislike a transcendental form of the Lord? Forms like the Virat Rupa and are, of course, not transcendental. If not, can we then say that the Lord deliberately manifests the forms that his devotee likes, or that whatever the form manifests his devotees like? Well, we're dealing with, you know, an eternal chicken and an eternal egg. So there is no measurement in time of a logical causation. The Lord doesn't manifest as his own forms rather than some separated material form. He doesn't manifest ugly forms. There aren't any unsuitable or undesirable forms. At the same time, the forms that he does show, there's always some devotee who wants to see that form. Otherwise, he wouldn't show it. Even if he has it, he wouldn't show it unless someone wanted to see it. You know, they exist eternally, but they're manifested at certain times and places in the material world. And there have to be devotees who worship those forms in order for those forms to manifest. Krishna goes where he's wanted. So I think it's answered, you know, that the forms are eternal anyway. There's no question of something coming before them, a devotee's desire or anything coming before the forms. And there's no question of him having other forms that are ugly that he hides in the closet. No, there are no such forms, ugly forms, of the Supreme Lord.
Thank you. In other words, we can meaningfully talk about manifesting forms only in this material world, because in the spiritual world there are always like co-eternal devotees and the Lord and their forms and their bhava, which is their... It's not that Krishna takes his devotees by surprise all of a sudden by manifesting different forms in the spiritual world, and they'll have to like them. But they always relate to his forms eternally, and they are kind of stuck with them, even if they're exposed to some other forms of the Lord, like Gopa Kumar.
The devotees in the spiritual world?
You're not stuck.
Don't have the choice that the devotees in the material world have?
But they've made their choice eternally forever. It's not that they...
No, but there is variety in the spiritual world.
Oscillate.
So even though everything in the spiritual world is eternal, but things in the spiritual world also can undergo avyabhav and tirobhav. Can be there in the spiritual world. There's nothing material about showing and hiding your form. So Krishna can not show everything also in the spiritual world. He'll change what he shows according to the changing desires of various devotees in the spiritual world also. That's a spiritual process. We see it in the material world, but because it's a spiritual process, it's also going on in the spiritual world. The Lord is showing what the devotees want to see. And that can vary from time to time. You know, it's not always exactly the same thing.
I was referring to the Bihad Bhagavatamrita description where Gopa Kumar went through all different like levels of existence in the spiritual world, and even though he appreciated different forms, he didn't really come to like them as much as there was something missing all the time.
Right, but that was not a normal process. Gopa Kumar is a special person.
But even when those Vaikunthavasis were exposed to descriptions of Krishna, they couldn't come to like them, and they still remained faithful to the original choice of...
They stayed in Vaikuntha.
Right. So they liked Vaikuntha Lord much better than...
And they got what they liked.
Right. So in other words, that's external choice that they make. It's not that they keep choosing all the time.
No, but there is variety. Things can appear to change in Vaikuntha. You know, a devotee who has a forearm form might drop the two of the arms for a certain purpose. It's described there also how sometimes the devotees appear in unusual forms for the pleasure of the Lord. And he may appear in unusual forms for their pleasure. So there can be apparently temporary changes in Vaikuntha. Not that everything's always constant, exactly, that monotonously exactly the same. There's variety. Within the oneness, there's variety.
Let me ask you a short related question to that.
Yes.
There was a discussion between Bharat Ram Prabhu and Kavi Karnapura Prabhu recently about one particular statement in the third canto. Is it the third canto of Bhagavatam? Where it is said Prabhupada chose to translate that the Lord's forms are beautified by the intelligence of his devotees. Is it beautified? Magnified. The beauty is magnified. The beauty is magnified.
Beauty is magnified.
Yeah, by the intelligence of their devotees. In other words, so can you comment on that a little bit if it's
the
related?
Same thing. Of course, the beauty of the Lord is infinite, but he doesn't always show the beauty completely. In general, the opulences are not everywhere shown to their full extent. Lord Shiva has an abode on the earth, Kailash, but he has a greater Kailash out in the coverings of the universe where he shows his opulences more. What he shows in Kailash on the earth is just a small sample. What Krishna shows, even when he comes to the earth, is just a sample of his glories. Also, the beauty is one of his opulences. The beauty is sometimes, to some devotees, shown only partially, to as much as they can grasp, as much as they can handle. So there's apparent increase and decrease in the manifestation of the beauty according to time and place and according to person who's perceiving, devotee. So when a devotee becomes more devoted. We're talking about intelligence. We're talking about devotional intelligence. The love of the devotee. Not just, his IQ, but his bhakti quotient. Not his intelligence quotient, but his devotion quotient, DQ. As that increases, if a devotee becomes more devoted, then Krishna will look more beautiful to him. It's subjective. It's not that Krishna absolutely becomes more beautiful. Something changes. You know, the wrinkles on his face disappear, because he put on some ointment. No, he doesn't change, but the perception by the devotee changes. And comparing between one devotee and another, one devotee who's more devoted will see Krishna as more beautiful than the less devoted devotee. Huh? Yes, Damodar, go, Papa.
Like it says here in the purport of that verse that I found, that being many times magnified by intelligence of his devotees, is that the devotees, from what I understand from the purport, the devotees in Vaikuntha, they see the Lord of Vaikuntha as more beautiful than Lakshmi. But then Prabhupada says that the devotees of Gokula or Krishna Loka see Radharani as more beautiful than Krishna. So,
yes.
Is that because by the intelligence? Okay.
I think that opinion is not completely unanimous. I think there's devotees in Goloka that some hold one opinion, some hold the other.
I mean, okay.
Yeah.
But he, because he says that Radharani is Manadaha,
yes,
or the enchanted by the beauty of Radharani. Yeah, he becomes.
Okay.
Madana Mohini.
Yes, yes. So that's the special quality of Vraja.
Is that, like it says, the exquisite beauty of Narayan being many times magnified by intelligence with devotees. Is that the devotees in Kuta, they consider, okay, Narayan's more beautiful than Lakshmi. So is that one way of seeing the interpretation?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Anyway, I didn't know what to say. This is way over my head. Okay, we didn't finish this paragraph. Patam Bhutam. What is this universe like? The verse is talking about how the whole universe is in Krishna. So what is this universe like? What kind of universe is inside you? You know, you can say that man is a mini cosmos. The whole universe is contained inside the man. And the yogis meditate inside their own bodies on everything. But is it like that or something different? What kind of whole universe is inside Krishna? Katam Bhutam. Sad Udyad Api Yat Muhur Udbhavat Tirobhavat Cha. It is real. What's inside Krishna? What kind of universe? It is real, yet in the process of appearing. Meaning that it repeatedly appears and disappears. Okay. Yad yasmin muhur jayate liyate cha tat tasmin evavabhati muvi tadvikara iveti bhavaha. If one thing repeatedly takes birth from and merges back into another thing, then its manifestation is only within that other thing. Just as the transformations of the element earth appear within that earth only. Okay, and just extend that. Everything in the material creation appears in Krishna only. It takes birth from him repeatedly, and then again merges back to him and over again. So he's the foundation of everything that exists, at least in the material world. Commentary? The Supreme Lord is one, but he displays multiple forms of himself, and without suffering change. Brahma now recognizes Krishna as the original personality of Godhead, from whom expand all other forms of God and everything else, spiritual and material. To discover the real nature of something that is seen to come into being, undergo changes, and meet its destruction, that, like the universe, seems to be coming into being, change, and then be destroyed. Everything in the material universe looks like that. To discover the real nature of such a thing, we need to identify what it is appearing from and disappearing back into. Potters, someone can offer you a cup of water. You might inquire, where'd the water come from? If it came out of the sewer, you might not want to drink it. Yeah, like that. Potters to know what kind of water it is. The question is, where did it come from? Potters can be observed. Potters can be observed, producing pots from earth. Pots that, when destroyed, are seen to turn back into earth. You throw the pot out in your backyard, and in a few years it disintegrates and turns back into the earth. The earth, therefore, must be their source. You may not know that, but you can deduce it. I saw the potters taking clay out of the ground and, rolling it up and then making pots out of it. Then I see the pots in my backyard merging back into the earth. I guess the pots come from the earth. The earth is the source of the pots. Even if I never knew that before, I can figure it out. The earth, therefore, must be their source. And the nature of the earth is their nature. Okay? What kind of nature? do the pots have? It must be an earthly nature since they come from the earth. And you can try it. You know, chew up a piece of pot, you'll see it tastes like earth. By Krishna's grace, Brahma has witnessed for himself everything created and uncreated. So he has a great opportunity to be a great scientist and get a Nobel Prize because he experimentally has witnessed everything in creation from the beginning to the end. No one else has the mass of data that he has. Now all he has to do is to draw the right conclusions from that data. Brahma has witnessed for himself everything created and uncreated, emanating and merging back into the little boy whom he tried to fool. Krishna showed him that. Everything coming out of him and going back into him. He concludes, therefore, that Krishna is the origin of everything. And the different natures of everything must be only samples of Krishna's infinite nature. If everything is coming from him, and all the qualities of everything must be his qualities, and he's probably got more qualities than those, then he must be a very interesting person with so many good, great qualities. Whatever interests us in the material world is just derivative from Krishna. That's the point that Brahma's making. Jiva Goswami has something more to say about this in 40.2, about this verse, which is the last verse we're going to read. The last verse that's being cited from Brahma. Tarhi kim mamam vikaritvam? Then am I subject to transformation, Krishna asks Brahma? Because everything's coming from me and going back into me? Does that mean pieces are being taken out of me and then stuffed back in? That I'm being diminished and then replenished? Am I undergoing transformation? Just like you can donate a few liters of blood, but you'll be weak for a few hours after that. They tell you, rest for an hour or two after donating blood because you just lost some of your blood. After walking out of the clinic, you get hit by a car, they'll have to put some blood back in you. So you're being depleted and replaced. Replenished. Does Krishna undergo such process when he has to, when universes come out of him? Is he depleted and has to be replenished? Nityaha. Mayato mayaya tvadiya chintya shakti visheshena vikaradi rahitasyaiva shrutes tu shabda mulatvat ityadau parinama svikarat Muhur udbhavat tirobhavat twad eva swapna abham tatulyam. Natwagyana matra kalpika twad api vaidarmyacha na swapnadivat iti nyayena. Okay, that's one sentence. Jiva Goswami managed to quote two different sutras of the Vedanta in the one sentence, just paraphrasing what Brahma said. So Brahma answers, no, you're not subject to transformation. No, he answers, it is from Maya, by Maya, a special inconceivable energy of yours, that even though you never undergo transformation or other changes, transformation means that your form turns into a different form. Your qualities, some of your qualities are replaced by different qualities. That's one kind of change. It's not the only kind of change. You could just get bigger or smaller rather than change, rather than transform. You might move from one place to another. You know, I'm sitting over here and then I walk out of the room. That's a change, but my qualities haven't changed just by the fact of my location changing. So there's other kinds of changes beside transformations. Therefore, Jiva Goswami says, parinama, or where is this? Even though we cannot write parinama svikarat. Okay, I just translated parinama as transformations and other changes. Because the word is parinama. You accept the process of evolution as described in such scriptures statements as the sutra, Shrutes tu shabda mulatvat, because the revealed scriptures say otherwise, and knowledge of the Supreme is derived from transcendental sound. Well, that's answering a Purvapaksha, but it doesn't tell us what the Purvapaksha is. We'll see that in the commentary. I will explain from Govinda Bhasha. But for now, just some Purvapaksha is being answered. No, because the revealed scriptures say otherwise, and knowledge of the Supreme is derived from transcendental sound. Actually, the Purvapaksha is about, does the Lord change? Does he undergo transformation? The answer is no, because the Shastra, the Shruti, says he doesn't undergo change. And whatever we know about the Supreme Lord, we only know from Shruti. If our logic or our perception tells us something opposite, put that aside and accept what the Shruti says. The Shruti says he doesn't change. And continuing, by your accepting this process, this universe appears like or is equivalent to a dream. By your accepting the process of evolution, of evolving the creation out of yourself, by your accepting this process of material evolution, this universe appears like or is equivalent to a dream. It's not literally a dream, it's real, but it's like a dream. Since it repeatedly appears and disappears, dreams come and go, and the world comes and goes, although it's actually more real than a dream, but it's like a dream. But the universe is not merely a concoction of the power of illusion, as is argued in the sutra, because it has a different nature, just like dreams and so on. What is that? Vaidharmyat cha na swapnadi vat. Okay, that we'll have to explain also in the commentary. We'll leave that for now. But that's an argument why some Purvapaksha is proposing that the whole creation of the world is an illusion, like a dream. But he says dreams, he's answering no, because the universe, just like a dream, has its own particular nature. It's real. It's just not the same. It's not real in the same way. The material world has its reality. It's not the same degree of reality as the spiritual world, but it's real. And a dream is also real in its own way. We'll see about that in the commentary. Tata avidya vritika maya karyatvad cha ashtadishanam. Brahma called the material world ashtadishanam. Jiva paramarta gana lopa kartri. Okay. And since it, the universe, is a product of the dynamic influence of illusion, within the created universe, intelligence becomes dormant. Ashtadishanam. Dishanam is intelligence. It means the setting of the sun. When the sun is set, you call it astasurya, suryasta. So there's the setting of intelligence, or the dormancy of intelligence. Intelligence goes to sleep when it enters material life. That's astadishanam. So within the created universe, intelligence becomes dormant, meaning that the creation disrupts the finite soul's spiritual understanding. Paramarta Gyana Lopa Kartri. The material creation is the doer, the Kartri, of the Lopa. Lopa, you know from grammar. The deletion, or here it's covering. Okay, removing of the intelligence, the spiritual, the paramarta intelligence of the jiva. That's done by the material creation. Ubayasmad api heto puru dukkha dukkham. That's another adjective given by Brahma. The world is full of all kinds of misery. Tadiya sukha abhasasyapi vastuto dukkha rupa twat. I see a mistake here. Sentence ending with a D instead of a T. I'll change it. Okay. For both of these reasons, and the two reasons are... The world is real. And the world, in the world, intelligence becomes dormant. For these two reasons, for both of these reasons, the created universe is the source of constantly repeated miseries. Since even the shadow of happiness found there is actually misery. One of the reasons why the world is miserable is because it's real. If it wasn't real, you were just watching a movie, about the Great World War, and seeing thousands of people being killed on the stage, on the screen. It was just entertainment, an exciting war movie. There's no real suffering in it for you. You're just the audience watching a movie. If it was real, if you were in the middle of it, then you'd be suffering. So because the material world is real, therefore we experience real suffering. And because it's just a product of the dynamic influence of illusion, therefore there's misery. Illusion creates misery. Reality creates happiness. It's the created universe, for both of these reasons, the created universe is the source of constant repeated miseries, since even the shadow of happiness found there is actually misery. People think they're happy, but they're actually miserable. Just go to Delhi and look at the people on the street. If you've lived in the South, I remember when I was living in Bangalore and I had to leave the country, leaving through Delhi. And we were in Delhi for 2 days. And the thing that struck me incredibly is how unhappy the people look there. They're striving so much for sense gratification, making so much money and spending it to buy so many things. And they're all, you can see, it's obvious, they're miserable. It's like that all over the material world. The apparent happiness, the shadow of happiness, is actually misery. Sorry? Is misery. Okay. Vina tat sataya tu asatswarupam shasha vishana tulyam asatswarupam. The opposite of satsvarup, asatsvarup. That's the material world, according to Brahma. Shasha vishana tulyam tad evam bhutam api sad iva anashvaram ivababhati mugdanam iti sheshaha. But apart from your presence within it, its identity is unreal, equal to a rabbit's horn, which is totally unreal. It's not just that a rabbit's horn is temporary, or that even that it's somebody's illusion. There is no such thing, even in a dream, well, maybe in a dream, but there's no such thing in reality as a rabbit's horn. Totally unreal. The world without you is totally unreal. And even though it appears as if real, as if permanent. Okay, it appears like that. Who does it appear like that to? Does everybody see it like that? The implied completion of the idea is it appears like that to foolish people. Brahma didn't say those words, but he's implying it. Not everybody. He doesn't see it like that. He has higher vision. Brahma is talking about how the world is not real, and some other people understand. Some people understand the world is not real. But to the foolish people, they think it's absolutely real, permanent. Okay, real is one thing. What about other qualities? Like it seems happy. Upalakshanam chaitad vyavahara gyana maya mahad adi atmakatwad gyan od bodhakam iva swarg ad yatmakatwad sukham iva cha. What he's saying, the world is seems to be real but is not really real, is one thing. There's more to say. This is only a partial indication. The universe also seems to be a source of knowledge. It seems to be Sat and also Chit and Ananda. The word universe also seems to be a source of knowledge, comprising as it does the Mahat and other subtle elements of practical knowledge. And the scientists are going to town discovering all the secrets of the universe. They think there's so much to be known from the universe. They're not interested in studying the spiritual world. They're fascinated with the material world. And it also seems to include happiness. And other people, they're not interested in science. They're interested in enjoying themselves. They're pursuing happiness, since it has realms such as heaven. So people are trying to go to heaven to enjoy. They're pursuing happiness in the material world. People think not only is it real, but it's a source of knowledge and a source of bliss, the material creation. Tadevam anyasya tat paricedyatvat swarupa shaktyaiva paricinnam aparichinnam cha tadevam vapur iti prakaranartaha brahma shri bhagavantam. That means we're at the end, not only of this anuchade, but of these four anuchades which covered these 11 verses by Brahma. In conclusion, the basic idea of this whole section, several anuchades, is because everything else is delimited by your body. Everything is inside your body. Therefore, it is only by the power of your personal energy that your body is both limited and unlimited. These verses, Bhagavatam 10, 14, verses 11 through 22, that's 12 verses, were spoken by Sri Brahma to the personality of Godhead. I think I said earlier that there was 11 verses.
Well, you did mention in Anuchet.
Do you know where I said 11?
Well, he says that himself.
Says 11 verses. But Okay, I'll just make a note of it. That Jiva Goswami said before. Where?
31.1
in his own words. Okay, I'll have to reconcile that. How come I count 12? 11 through 22 would be 12 verses. Anyway, if I don't do this, then someone, will complain when the book is published. So we have to sort it out. These verses were spoken by Sri Brahma to the personality of Godhead. Commentary. Now we're going to explain these two quotes from the Vedanta Sutra. In this first part of the second chapter of the Vedanta Sutra, a refutation is presented of the proposition that a finite jiva might be the creator of the world. Hey, someone is proposing that. A jiva might have created the world. Actually, Neoplatonic Christian theory says that. There's a demiurge. Of course, we also say Brahma created the world. Okay, so someone may think the jiva is the creator. And a defense is made of the counter proposition that the infinite supreme Lord is the creator. So okay, that's what the Vedanta Sutra is doing here in this section. Sutra 2.1.26 reads, Krishna prasaktir nidavadya shabda vyakopo va. This is the Purvapaksha, actually. For a finite soul, who has an atom of spiritual potency, is supposed to be infinitesimal and without parts. Because he's, according to the Vaisheshika philosophy, only that which is middle-sized can have parts. That which is infinite has no parts, and that which is infinitely small has no parts. Makes sense? If it had parts, then the parts would be smaller than it. It wouldn't be infinitely small. Atom, if it has subatomic particles, is not really the atom. It's not the smallest thing. It's not indivisible if you can break it up and pick out the parts. that doesn't fit the definition of atom. So what are we dealing with in modern science? They're not atoms because you're breaking them apart and taking the pieces apart. Okay, the sutra reads, Krishna prasaktir niravayava shabda vyakopova. For a finite soul, who as an atom of spiritual potency is supposed to be infinitesimal and without parts, to produce the entire creation, he would have to use up his whole self, Krishna prasakti, in the process of transforming into all the expansions of matter. Even if he had that much in him, it would use him up completely. Since he cannot be divided into parts, the jiva, even a single simple transformation would require the transformation of his whole self. If there has to be a change, he can't split up into two parts, one that changes and one that doesn't. If he changes, the whole thing has to change. What to speak then of the impossibility of the jivas expanding into all the complexities of the material creation? It cannot be allowed that the jiva is composed of parts without committing a denial of vyakopa, shabda vyakopa, of the words, shabda, of the Upanishads. The only way you're going to be able to propose that part of the jiva transforms is to deny what the Upanishads say. The Upanishads in many statements insist that the jiva is partless, niravayava shabda vyakopo. So either, if your jiva is going to be the creator of the whole universe, either he's got to use himself up completely and nothing will be left. Or else, if he only uses part of himself, then you've contradicted the Upanishadic claim that the jiva doesn't have any parts. You got a problem both ways. The Mundaka Upanishad, for example, tells us about Esho Nur Atma, this soul who is atomic in size. The technical meaning of an anu is absolutely small and indivisible, atomic. Tom means cut. Hysterectomy, tummy, tom, means to cut out the womb. So tom in Greek means to cut. Atom means no cutting, can't be cut. Same thing with anu, means indivisible. Okay, now the answer. That was the previous sutra that gave the Purvapaksha. But if this is so, rejoin the proponents of creation by the jiva. Okay, now the jiva proponents have more to say. The same fault can be ascribed to the Supreme Lord. Okay, you say the jiva can't be the creator because he'd have to use himself up or else be dividable. Well, isn't that same problem there in the Supreme Lord? He'd have to use himself up completely or else be divided, and he's not supposed to be divided. The same fault The same fault can be ascribed to the Supreme Lord of his also having to use up his whole self in transforming into the material creation. The next sutra of the Vedanta responds. Shrutes tu shabda mulatva. That's where that sutra fits in. No, the Supreme Lord does not have to deplete all or part of himself to expand into creation. And why? Shabda mulatvat. Shrutes. Because the revealed scripture, Shruti, says so. It says he doesn't get cut up or used up. Therefore, we accept it on the authority of Shruti. Somehow he expands, but he doesn't get used up and he doesn't get divided up. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan shares some of what the Shruti says in this regard in his Govinda Bhashya on this sutra. Alokikam achintyam gyanatmakam apimurtam gyanavat chaikam eva bahudavabhatam cha niramsham api samsham chamitam apyamitam cha sarvakartri nirvikaram cha brahma. Brahman is not of this world. He is inconceivable, pure consciousness, yet still with perceptible form. And he is a possessor of consciousness. I just want to add a word here. And he is a possessor of consciousness. Although one only, he appears as many. Although he has no parts, he also has parts. Although only one, he appears as many. Although he has no parts, he also has parts. He is limited and unlimited, and is the creator of all, yet remains untransformed. Okay? That's a summary by Baladeva Vibhushan of what the Upanishads tell us in various places. For example, the Mundak Upanishad 3.17 describes the Mundak Upanishad describes the Supreme Soul as not of this world with the words Brihat Cha Tad Divyam Achintya Rupam. That Infinite Supreme is transcendental. His forms are inconceivable. The Gopaltapani Upanishad, in three places, same verse, same statement, but it occurs three times, shows him to be pure consciousness in personal form, and one, but also many. Tadekam Govindam Satchid Ananda Vigraham. I offer prayers to please that one Govinda, Tadekam Govindam, whose body is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. And then it says, the Gopaltapani Upanishad, these are three different statements in three different places of the Gopaltapani Upanishad. Second statement is, Barhapida Biramaya Ramaya Kuntamedase. Okay, I have a little mistake here to fix. Obeisances to that Lord, to the Lord of enjoyment, who charms with the peacock feather ornament on his head, and whose wisdom is never confounded. And third statement, Ekopi san bahuda yovabati, he who is one, but appears as many. I'm going to change that. Although he is one, he appears as many. Because it is a complete sentence. Okay. How the Supreme Lord creates without transforming by his apparently contrary potencies can be understood from revealed scripture, not by empiric science or logic. We must depend on the authority of Shruti, because he is Shabdamula, known first of all by means of transcendental sound. How can you know the Supreme? How can you know Krishna? By hearing, not by any other means. You can't discover him in a telescope or microscope. One who has heard correctly about him may then proceed to see him with one's own eyes. But the foundation of hearing must first be laid. The second part of the same second chapter of the Vedanta addresses the doctrines of the Yogacara Buddhists. Their theory of creation, called Vijnanavada, is that only consciousness is real. They reason that since supposedly external objects are only known through their perception in consciousness, it is not even necessary to assume anything else exists outside of consciousness. The Vedanta disagrees, 2.2.28. It disagrees by saying, na-a-bhava upalabde. It can't be that objects outside of consciousness don't exist. because we perceive them as existing externally. Okay, you can say something doesn't exist if you don't see it. I can say there's no pot because nobody sees a pot. You know, where's the pot? Nobody sees the pot. Well, I say there isn't any pot. But if we all see a pot in front of us, can I say there's no pot? If I'm some sort of Mayavadi or Buddhist, I can tell you there's no pot, even though there's a pot right in front of us. You know, there's a pot of milk. And I'm saying, sorry, there's no pot. Nobody can have any milk. Just because I'm a Mayavadi, a Buddhist, I'm denying there's a pot, and nobody gets any milk. But if you see something right in front of you, then there's no sense in denying that it exists. It cannot be that the objects outside of consciousness do not exist. You're proposing that theoretically because everything's perceived through consciousness. Therefore, let's forget about everything outside of consciousness. Deny it exists. But you can't do that. It's not reasonable because we see that all these things on the outside are there. We're all seeing it, and we're seeing it all the time. I come back tomorrow, and that fan is still making noise. So, you know, I don't say, oh, it's not making noise. It's just a hallucination in my head. But how come every time I come here, I hear the same noise, and how come you hear it and he hears it? It's ridiculous to assume that what everybody perceives is unreal. And the next sutra argues further. The Vyasadeva is not going to let these Yogacara Buddhists away easily. Further argument. Vaidharmyacha naswapnadi vat. And they, the objects outside of consciousness, are not unreal like a dream. Don't now tell me it's a dream. Okay, there's a noisy fan, but it's just a dream. Wake up and it'll go away. And they are not unreal like a dream, since they have qualities different than those of dreams. Dreams, you can tell a dream. You know, if you were awake, you could tell it's just a dream. Because it's different than ordinary reality. It's lacking the normal qualities of waking reality. But our perception of external objects is also not like just like a dream. It has qualities that a dream doesn't have. If I get eaten up by a tiger in my dream, I can still wake up and continue to live. But if I were eaten up by a real tiger, that would be it. So there are different qualities of the external reality. If it was just a dream, then go ahead and bang your head on the wall real hard. It's just a dream. There's different qualities in the external world. It's not just a dream. Dreams are private and last only seconds or minutes. But the things of external reality are shared publicly, and they last for years or even ages. There's some more here. The material creation is produced by the transformations of the Supreme Lord's inferior energy. Because it is a second-rate reality like a dream, and because involvement with it degrades the scope and quality of the finite soul's awareness, the jivas in the material domain suffer constantly. It's a second-rate reality. It's cheap and ugly. And being involved with such cheap, ugly reality degrades your consciousness. So you can't be happy. I'll give you a nice plate of prasadam, but first we're going to put a glove on your tongue. And we're going to cover your tongue with scotch tape. Go ahead and enjoy your meal. But we can't enjoy like that with our consciousness dulled. The jivas in the material domain suffer constantly. Although naturally always eager to be happy. The Supreme's presence in matter is imperceptible, and so he seems to be absent. The created world thus has no real substance. Its apparent permanence is false. It has a real existence and a real connection with its creator, but these are unknowable by conditioned souls. They imagine that their world is eternal, and that perfect knowledge and happiness are available there. Okay, there's an extra word. Let me delete it. But this is just more illusion. A lot of words mixed up here. But this is just more illusion. As the Lord of Vaikuntha told Brahma, Ritair tam yat pratiyeta na pratiyeta chatmani tad vidyad atmano mayam yata baso yata tamaha. Whatever appears to be of any value, if it is without relation to me, has no reality. Know it to be my illusory energy, like a reflection or a dark shadow. That's from the four-verse Bhagavatam. Okay, that finishes Anuchet 40. So we'll continue. Today's Friday, right? We continue on Sunday. Okay, can I make an announcement? A request? Huh? Did I say all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai?